And I guess digest should probably be in quotations here, but I'll talk about that now. So what we're actually measuring is just this angle delta phi, which is just the angle between the two leading jets in PT in the transverse plane. And there's two choices, so it's a smaller one. So back to back here is pi, and the angle necessarily has to be smaller than that or equal to pi. So at leading order, where you have just digests, just two jets, then they have to be back to back in the transverse plane. And so here, delta phi is pi. But as you add more jets to the event, then necessarily to balance this, this angle needs to get smaller. So for three jets, you have the range of values there, and then four and more, this angle can get smaller. And so phi is the azimuthal angle. So the decorrelation refers to kind of like the deviation from the leading order case where things are back to back. So what we'll look at is as a measure of kind of higher order perturbative QCD, you can look at this distribution, but only looking at the two leading jets. So you don't have to do something like reconstruct lots of these low ET jets, which is difficult to do. So it's a digest measurement that I'm just looking at two jets. But hopefully can tell us more and test predictions of higher order perturbative. And I just point you to a D0 paper, which is the most recent one, I think, from the Tevatron. So the actual measurement here, so of course you could just measure the differential cross-section. But to eliminate some of the systematics, what we do is just normalize this by 1 over the total cross-section. And so what this does is you don't have to worry about luminosity and not as much about trigger efficiencies. So you're just looking essentially at just the shape of this distribution, not the actual normalization. And then because the bin widths are arbitrary, I then divide each bin by its width, so it's per radian or written per unit delta phi. And then this is the kind of distribution I'm looking at here. So I go from pi over 2 to pi. And also I have some kinematic cuts, so on eta and ET, which I'll show now. So the bottom right plot here shows how I've bin this in bins of ET. So this is the ET of the leading jet in the event. And so it goes from, I choose bins from 100 to 200, 2 to 4, 4 to 8, and 8 to 1600. GEV. Because I don't have in this Monte Carlo sample, I don't have enough statistics for the higher bin. Also, I wouldn't expect statistics in real data for the size of data set I'm looking at. I won't show anything for this highest bin, just these three here. And you can see that the amount of decorrelation depends on the ET of the leading jet, so which bin it is here. And then I also make a cut on the pseudorapidity of now both jets. So both the leading jets have to be within this cut of absolute value of eta less than 0.5. And this is a pretty narrow cut. So this is really just the central region of the phase space, and I guess of the detector more importantly. So what this does is it helps you avoid eta-dependent corrections and stuff like the jet energy scale. Or the resolution. Also, because Atlas has different technologies as you move out in eta, we're talking about a very early measurement here where we might not understand our detector perfectly, to say the least. So you can avoid transitioning between different sub-detectors as well. Of course, this limits your statistics a lot. This is a tight cut, and I think we're going to keep it tight at first, but the actual value needs to be optimized a little bit when we see the quality of the data and also how much there are. And just to give you an idea, so I'm talking about making this measurement with 5 inverse picograms of data, which may be pessimistic, but so at the nominal low luminosity running for the LHC, that's about 14 hours of data taking. It's actually more because the efficiency isn't 100%, but of the order of days. And you see here for each ET bin, the number of events you expect for that much data. So you don't just turn on the LHC at 10 to the 31. We need to ramp it up. And so, maybe this is the first month, first 2 months, I don't know. But we'll see. Nothing's on yet. So just a little bit about the Monte Carlo data set I'm looking at here. So it's been generated with AltGen and Herwig to do the showering and hybridization. It's at 10 TeV center mass, and I'm using anti-KT algorithm. I'm going to talk about RICO, reconstructed jets, and truth jets. So I just want to make clear what that means. So a reconstructed jet is you have your event generator, and then eventually get stable particles interacting with the detector. And this is then, we do a full Jeanne-4 simulation of every little part of the detector, also simulate the electronics, and then get out what we would see from the detector. And then from those values, we measure the energy and run our jet algorithms on it. The truth jets will be the same jet algorithm, but using the inputs, the particles coming from the event generation. So it's after hybridization, so it's kind of what you expect to see without any of the detector effects. And just for interest, I guess, this plot here just shows the number of Monte Carlo events for each of these EQ bins, for each bin that I have in this data set. And you see, actually, coincidentally, if you look back at the last plot, the black one here is about the same as 5 over speak event. But that's just a coincidence. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the systematics that go into this measurement, because unfortunately it's not just as easy as just filling a histogram and walking away. So I'll talk about the reconstruction efficiency. So the idea here is we don't always see every jet that's there. We don't always reconstruct it. And so if you miss the first or second jet, then you might be measuring this delta phi between the first and third, which is not a terrible thing to do, but it's not the observable we're trying to measure. The other thing is you have some finite phi angular resolution, and because the distribution drops so steeply, you can get bin-to-bin migrations because of this resolution. And then the ET resolution as well, because you don't measure the jet's ET perfectly, you can again switch the second and third jets and then be measuring the delta phi between the wrong two jets again. Also, that resolution can move jets in or out of the EQ windows we're looking at. And also, I'll also look at the effect of having an absolute shift in the jet energy scale. So first, talking about the reconstruction efficiency. So like I said, sometimes you'll have here your two leading jets, and one of them you don't reconstruct. And so I wind up, instead of measuring this as delta phi, I measure this instead. And so first I look at, using the Monte Carlo truth information, I look at the reconstructed efficiency, the reconstruction efficiency as a function of ET. And you see here our lowest bin starts at 100 GeV. So it is actually pretty close to 1, but it's not exactly 1. And because there's so many fewer events in this highly decorrelated area, for some reason the events you're not reconstructing are migrating from that to the higher ones. 1% could be a big effect. And it probably is like 1 or 2%. And so in order to model this effect, what I do is just run the analysis again, but this time I ensure that every pair of truth jets is matched to the two leading reconstructed jets. So I always have a match. They can switch order, so one can become two, two can become one, but they have to match. And I just remake the distribution. And so if there's an effect by me missing jets, then I'll see a difference in these two distributions. So that's what's shown here. So you can't see them because they're right on top of each other, but this is the black is the requiring the truth matching, and then the blue is just all the events with just the full reconstruction. And I take the ratio of these two distributions here, and you see there's really no effect in these Monte Carlo data anyway. And this is the type of plot I'll show now for the next few slides, where I have some baseline distribution, and then I've tried to model some of these effects, and I'll take the ratio to see what the magnitude of those effects are. And so I'll also, sorry, I'll just show one example plot for each of these, and then the backup slide, if you guys are interested, which you're probably not, shows the other ET bins. So this is the lowest one. And in each case, I think I've chosen the ones that have the most effect. So next thing I looked at is the effect of the phi resolution. So the first thing I did was estimate what that resolution was. And I do this using, again, the comparison of the reconstructed jets to the truth jets. So what I do is I take the response as the reconstructed phi minus the truth phi. And then I split it up, for instance, in bins of ET here. And so for each bin of ET, I plot that distribution. And I take the width of that and take that as the resolution. And I do the same thing in bins of eta here. And what you see is in the region we're looking at, both in ET and in eta, it's flat. And so for that reason, I decided just to take one number for the resolution. And so this is this distribution here now with the cuts for just for all the ET and eta range I'm looking at. And I take the width of this blue distribution, which is 70 milliradians, as being an estimate of the phi resolution. And then what I do is I now take the truth jets, and I take their phi values and just smear them by a Gaussian of width of 15 milliradians and see the effect. And then just to be pessimistic, I also do it by 20, 25, and 35 in case this is an underestimation. And so the results are shown here. The black histogram is just the truth distribution, and then the colored ones here you see are 15, 20, 25, and 35 milliradians smearing. And you see for the most part it's of the order of 5, maybe a little more percent. Although it looks like where the bins get narrow here, which is where you'd expect to see an effect, where the bins are now getting comparable in width to the resolution, you maybe see that there is actually a systematic effect. So to look at this, what I did was just double the number of bins. And then you see clearly here as the resolution increases, then you actually see that this is actually a systematic effect. Now, the thing is that if you wanted for some reason to have extremely fine binning here, then this is something you have to correct for. But if you keep your bins of, you know, maybe double the size or so of your resolution at the smallest, this resolution is pretty small, then this isn't something that I think you need to worry about. So the next thing I looked at was then the resolution in ET. So first I'll just sketch out a way to estimate this resolution using data. So what I do is I construct this variable A, which is just essentially a measure of how much the two leading jets differ in ET. And then you can show that with a few assumptions. One, that these are approximately the same, and that their uncertainties are about the same. You can see that the width of this distribution, sigma A, is proportional to how we usually plot the ET resolution here, so sigma ET over ET. I also apply a correction for a third radiated jet, because in the case where you have a third jet, you don't expect ET1 and ET2 to be equal. And so after that correction, you see these are the purple points here. So this is now not the average ET, but it's estimating the single jet resolution as a function of the average ET of the two leading jets. And you see, just as a check, if I use the information, the truth information in blue points, you see it's the same. So that gives you an idea that this method is estimating the resolution correctly. And then parameterize it by the standard function here, and these are just the fit values I use. And then again, I take the truth jets, and now I smear their ETs by Gaussian, where I get the width of the Gaussian from this here. And then I plot the truth again, and then the spectrum again with the ET smear. And this is the one that had the biggest effect, and you see it smears things by about Well, less than 10% anyway. So that's considering the ET resolution. And then now I look at the effect of just an overall shift in the jet energy scale. So I look at it as here, just a constant, a flat shift. But you can also consider this as a function of eta, which I haven't done yet and isn't shown here. But if it's a function of eta, then you can have jet swapping between the second and third jets, for example. But what I look at here is just shifting that by 2, 5, 10, and 15%, both up and down, and seeing the effect. So I didn't show the first ET bin here because there's very little effect, but you see this is now the biggest systematic we have. And in the worst cases, it's up to 30 or 40%, but that's with a shift of 10% or 15% anyway. In the overall jet energy scale. So this is bigger than the other ones so far. So just a few more little notes. One is just a note on where the position of these points are in X. So I don't take the bin centers because this drops so steeply. So what I do instead is just take an average over the bin and plot the point there. And you can see in some cases the difference is quite big. So just to get an idea of kind of the discrimination power of this, what I've done is, so I have the Alkton-Herwig generated sample, which I've shown all these for, and I also had a sample generated with Pythia. So I fit an exponential function to them and then take a ratio of those two between the Pythia over the Alkton and see how different they are. And you see in some cases it's almost a factor of two here, which I think is, which shows you that, these systematic errors are probably a manageable thing in order to still be able to discriminate against different differences in these generators. And I think even you can expect a bigger difference. This is a D0 plot from that paper, and you see between two different tunes of Pythia and Herwig as well, maybe factors up here, factors of five or more between them. So it looks positive for being able to have some sort of discriminating power. And then kind of the first step in getting a theory prediction is I'm running a program called NLOJet++. And then plotting the leading order and next leading order predictions here. This is really, right now anyway, it's the first step, but it's really comparing apples and oranges because these plots are just at the parton level, and so you don't expect them to match, but the next thing I plan on doing is then trying to incorporate showering and hybridization and see what happens, but this is just kind of a first step into that. So yeah, just to conclude, I think that this is a measurement which can be done with very early data, so maybe days or weeks or a little bit longer of data, certainly statistically, and then also the systematic uncertainties seem like they'll be hopefully manageable as well. So the next steps are, modeling the jet energy scale uncertainty as a function of eta. Also, maybe investigating different ranges in pseudorapidity. So either opening up that middle range, or even you can maybe keep it narrow and move it to different parts of the detector where you think things will be uniform. So that might be a forward region, middle of the forward, downward persistence. And also get accurate distributions with different generators and the NLO prediction. So.
Is all this to tune the various generators?
That's up to people that tune generators. I'm interested in just making the measurement and then giving it to whoever would like it, but that's not my goal.
What other use is this?
That's what you can use it for.
Could you use something besides KT? algorithm?
I've used the cone algorithm as well that everyone hates and yells at you. The NPKP algorithm has been chosen to be the for the beginning the Atlas default. So if you want to use something else, you need to negotiate for it.
Well, the data will be in a form that you're free to use.
You are free to use whatever you want, but if you want to use the calibrations and everything which are official and agreed upon, I think there's the NPKP algorithm and different types of clusterings will be done kind of centrally. If you do it yourself, you need to do some sort of validation as well, I guess. But you are free to do whatever you want. But then when it's time to publish, you might have to justify a little bit more if you use something different.
So I guess the two generators you were comparing were Pythia and then AlpGen plus Herwig.
Yeah.
Is there any reason there's no Pythia plus AlpGen?
Well, you can AlpGen can interface to either. Atlas has chosen to do it with Herwig, but you could do it with either. So AlpGen does its calculation and then showers and then does matching to decide if it keeps the event or not. And so that could be Pythia or Herwig, and I think it's easy to do either. I don't know why it was chosen that way. But these are essentially produced like Monte Carlo data sets, and that was the choice many years ago. I don't know why.
Any other questions? Is the speaker here?